Blog Talk Radio.
After 40 murders in 1 month, the Dallas Police Department is now in triage mode. The department increased the number of homicide detectives from 14 to 22, effective immediately. Fox 4's Lori Brown joining us now from DPD headquarters with the story. Lori.
Heather, the huge number of murders are the most in recent memory at DPD. When asked when the last time was that the department had that many murders in 1 month, a spokesperson went back to 1991, when there were 45 murders.
I have increased the homicide unit to 22 detectives, and that's effective immediately.
After 40 murders in May, four of them just last night, the Dallas Police Department is throwing 60% more manpower into its homicide unit.
Everybody knows at this point we're 600 officers short. That's not a secret, nor has it ever been a secret. We at the Dallas Police Department don't use that as an excuse. Again, the homicide detectives work extremely hard. The Dallas Police Department works extremely hard to keep the community safe. So would I love to have more officers? Absolutely. Is that an excuse? No, it is not.
The eight additional homicide detectives are coming from the cold case unit and the team that works shootings that don't end in death.
I am not disbanding the cold case as a unit. They still will be working cold cases.
Both candidates for Dallas mayor are saying they are the right person to tackle Dallas's spike in crime.
We do not have enough police officers today to adequately police the city of Dallas.
Last year, Dallas City Councilman Scott Griggs worked to increase starting police pay from $48,000 to $60,000, along with 3% across-the-board raises. But DPD still hasn't been able to get ahead, even with its latest graduating class. Instead, the department remains a force of just 2,900 officers. Griggs says the city needs to do more.
So this is a crisis. We need to increase police pay, increase benefits, and aggressively attract and recruit more police officers.
State Representative Eric Johnson was not available for questions, but he told us this in a statement. As mayor, I will work with the police chief, the city manager, and my colleagues to identify immediate and necessary changes that will deal with this issue head on. It's also important to remember that murders and violent crimes also are symptoms of larger challenges we all face as a city. The Dallas Police Department called on the public for help.
When it comes to fighting crime, it takes everybody, and everybody has to be a participant. And again, we need your help in solving these crimes.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back, because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain.
Joining us today, and we hope he's in the house. What's up, nigga? You here?
All right, Nick, can you hear me?
Are you talking to me, Stan?
Yeah, can you hear me okay, brother?
Oh, my brother. Yeah, let me apologize. Obviously, it's a pleasure to be here, but I am on the road, Stan, so I'm about 15 minutes from the house, but obviously, it's a pleasure to be here. I know that today's topic is absolutely, it's an imperative. Dallas is in crisis, and we're still not having these conversations. So it's a welcome opportunity to start this dialogue.
All right, brother. Once again, we're glad to have you in here. I'll tell you what, you guys right now, it's a catastrophe up there in Dallas right now. 40 murders in the month of May alone. And, you know, for the last 2.5 years, you've been telling the people up in Dallas that this was coming. You've been out there on the mountaintop preaching, you know, reform and the Manning situation up there for at least the last 2.5 years that I've known you. You know, you've been at the forefront. You've had people say, well, you know, that's not exactly what's going on. That's not 100% correct. There may be a problem with Nick's numbers. When they were saying they were 300 people short, you were saying it was closer to 1,000 and providing people with the statistics that support what you were saying. So, you know, now that everything is coming full circle, you know, they're starting to see that now the things that you talk about are coming into play. So it's no longer a situation where we can push Nick to the side. And I want to say up front, this show today, this show is not about bashing the Dallas Police Department and bashing the men and women that work there. Because the Dallas Police Department right now has a bunch of men and women that are suiting up, going out there, fighting the battles out in the street, and they're dealing with a bunch of politics, posturing, special interests, and these men and women are putting their lives on the line to get out there and work these calls understaffed. I mean, when I say understaffed, I mean severely understaffed. It takes a lot for these men and women to go out there. I can tell you from firsthand knowledge. I went up last year and I rode with Nick up there, and, you know, I'll tell you, I was in shock. When I got up there, Nick works in the, I believe, the Central Division. And when I got up there, and I was expecting to see, you know, top-notch cars, top-notch equipment, great facilities, maybe 25, 30 people in the morning roll call. You know, I just thought that this was just going to be a unique experience, you know, after working at Waco, where we do have, you know, very good equipment. Anyway, I get up there, and we walk into the roll call room, and there's 9 people in there for the day shift. And we have more people working the day shift in Waco than showed up that day in Dallas. And then when we went out to get a car, you know, I had to ask Nick, you know, well, where are we? We walked through this sea of patrol cars that I thought it was their in-town lot. The cars were junky. And we got into this car, and it's like a third-generation in-car computer system. No radar. I mean, just, you know, an old beater of a patrol car. Now, the facilities that these men and women had to work in the Central Division, I could tell you, you know, it was horrible. That building was absolutely horrible. So I'm looking at it from a morale perspective. Before these men and women even get out onto the street, they work in a building that looks like a trash dump. You know, they got to drive vehicles that are raggedy, ill-equipped. You know, the equipment was ancient, and you guys may have good equipment somewhere else. I'm just going to say what I saw when I was there. You know, I will say that the officers I met were real polite. They're real friendly. They didn't know that I was a police officer at the time, but they were real friendly, you know, real polite. We got out on the street, and the call load was so bad that it's just, you didn't have a choice. I mean, it was just backed up all day long with nobody really to send. And we rode around. I don't think, outside of going to a call, I don't think we saw another officer in passing. So there is a big Manning problem in Dallas. And just to kind of give a little bird's eye view of the scope of the problem, if we look at the, these are some starting salaries that I pulled up here in Texas and in the Dallas area, some of them, as to why. When a young person wants to be a police officer and he or she comes into the Dallas area looking, why should they pick Dallas? Okay, let's see. Arlington, Texas Police Department, the average starting salary, these numbers may be off one way or another, but this is what I pulled down off of their sites, $72,000. Plano, Texas, is starting $67,155. Dallas PD is 60,000. Fort Worth PD is 59,000. Grand Prairie, Texas, 54,700. Austin PD, 54,300. Waco PD, 46,300. Houston PD, 40,508. And San Antonio PD, 40,508. Now, when you look at these salaries, you have to ask yourself, okay, cost of living. How much is it going to cost me now to live in this city or in the area of the city? Dallas has a very high cost of living. Also, the call value is so high that you have to work in that. So why would I want to go work at Dallas PD? Now, they just graduated a class. I think it was 31 people. I'm going to be curious to see after 2 years how many of those 31 people stay at Dallas and how many of them decide, you know what, I'm going over to Fort Worth. I'm going to go over to Fort Worth where I can make about the same or a little more, and I don't have to put up with the headaches. You know, that's not going to be unusual to see. But right now they've got a manning crisis up there in Dallas that Nick told them was coming. You got 40 murders in the month of May alone. Nick, can you tell us what is going on in Dallas, Texas?
You know, Stan, I want to start off by obviously kudos to the men and women of this department that work the streets. The detectives that are working here are doing just a superlative job. They're so understaffed. It's just amazing the work ethic. But I want to make a point, too. You know, Stan, and I don't say this with any hubris, I'm privileged to speak to this. I've gone before the city council 3 times. I want to make a point that there's some deep and dark undercurrents that really are driving this narrative right now. The fact of the matter is, I told the city council in August of 2017 that they no longer had a viable policing function there. Now, keep in mind, almost 2 years later, we're in a cycle of vicious criminal conduct. 40-something murders last month. The shootings are on pace to match that for June. And, Stan, we, again, vastly understaffed. What we don't talk about is the fact that I'm sitting on hundreds and hundreds of call sheets that have the entry, call expired, sergeant notified, no elements available. Now, let me make a point. Again, this is so important that the listening audience understand that as recently as 5 or 6 months ago, Chief Hall was saying she didn't even know if we needed additional staffing. This past week, Chief Moore said it was just common knowledge we were at least 600 officers short. That's a tremendous disconnect, Stan. It's astounding. Now, the homicides, let me make a point. They are touting the fact that they've gone to 22 detectives. A homicide detective is not appointed. He's made. A homicide detective is made over years of training. So never mind that we have all these additional bodies. You may as well tell a first baseman to prepare to pitch a game. He can't do it, Stan. You know, I've said this all along, and I hate to sound like a naysayer constantly, but the fact is, if you're on the fourth floor of a burning building, and right now the fire's on the first floor, it's incumbent upon me to continue to warn you until you understand that you must act. Now, what I'm talking about here, and I need to make this point, Scott Griggs at least has confronted this and called it a crisis. Eric Johnson says he's fear-mongering. Eric Johnson says that we're looking at challenges. We're not looking at a challenge. Passing a bar exam or teaching your kid piano is a challenge. We're talking about tragedies. I can't fathom for a minute, Mr. Johnson, looking at a family who's had a member die, violently die, and say, I'm sorry, we have some challenges ahead of us. That doesn't cut it. These people are still in denial, Stan. And until we come to the table and say, we have a catastrophe in Dallas of our own making, there'll be no solutions. And then let me finish with this. When I said before the city council on 3 occasions, you no longer have the luxury of saying you didn't know. Culpability has been established. This you can put at the feet of Mayor Rollins, City Manager Broadnax, and Chief Hall. She's known all along that we could not get the job done. Now, I'm told that she inherited this. This is correct. But what she inherited, she didn't speak to. She never sought to modify it. She never sought to solve any of the problems we have, and now crime is off the charts. And to quote Chris Salcedo with WBAP, Dallas is lost, saying there are no reference points for where we are historically. We cannot hearken back to a prior time and say this is what we need to do to effect some type of solution. We're in a lot of trouble, Stan.
You know, Dick, one of the things with it that gets me is I remember when you first started coming out and you were bringing these problems to the forefront, you know, the first thing that you catch when you do that is internal flack. You catch it from coworkers, superiors, and a bunch of the political apologists that typically run cities. And you were telling them this was coming. The summer in 2 years is not going to be pretty, and now it's here. And the thing is, okay, you have a class of 31 people that just graduated the academy. Okay, you cannot recruit your way out of this mess. You can't legislate your way out, and they cannot arrest their way out of this. See, this is a direct result of what happens when you do not have community policing instilled in communities. If Dallas had community policing, they would not have the problems that they have right now in these communities. If you go right across the street to Fort Worth, they are not struggling with all of this nonsense that Dallas is putting up with. And it's a shame because you got good men and women up there that are going out there, busting their ass every day. There's a dollar for the curse jar. I knew it was coming. Every day, dealing with these problems, but this exists in police departments to all degrees. And for folks who say this is not true, you go talk to an officer you know really well, and they'll tell you it is. You got a bunch of special interest people in every city that don't want to wait in line for service, that think because they have the chief's cell phone number or because they're on the council or they're one of the inside little people in town, they can move these officers around in the city like little checkers on a board for the event. And oftentimes the neighborhoods that need to be served aren't getting served. Now, here we have Dallas, 40 murders. I've listened to 5 different interviews from police administrators. I haven't heard a solution. What good is adding, understand you want to solve it, but moving people around within a department is not going to solve it at all. How much have people on the city council, did they reach out to you before this tidal wave of murders hit? You know, because they can't say, Stan,
right. No, you're entirely right. I want to make a point. My hat's off to Scott Griggs. At least he's speaking to the truth. He's reached out to me and challenged me. Nick, show me why you're saying what you're saying. Jennifer Staubach Gates is another person that I take my hat off to. She engaged me in conversation. She wanted to know the truth. Now, I can show you. I've sent repeatedly big chunks of information to every sitting council member, and no one's reached out and said, Nick, we need to sit down. I need to know why you're talking as you do. I've invited Councilman Lee Klein to meet me anywhere in the city so we could have an open debate. And of course, he never took me up on it. But the fact of the matter is, my conversation isn't academic. My conversation has everything to do with life and death. And I will be doing a YouTube piece, Stan, with the assistance of some professional people, that Dallas is dying. Now, do we mirror what's happening in Seattle? The dynamics are somewhat different. But if it, in fact, it's true, and we know it is, that order is the first requisite in a free and open society, then order has been compromised in Dallas. We don't have the wherewithal to do the job. What's intriguing to me and upsetting, Stan, is that now we see the chief and others in positions of authority who knew what was coming scurrying about to ascribe blame to other dynamics. Now, keep in mind they can only do so in generalities, Stan, because to be specific to the etiology of our miasma, our problems, is to lay the blame on self. You don't need to go any further than look in the mirror. Especially when I told you repeatedly over years that these days were coming. And, you know, Stan, I want to make a point. You know, I work with colleagues who are awesome, who are being disciplined. They're being audited on an hour-by-hour basis, not at my channel, because we have a chief at Central and a major who are extremely professional and have a rapport with the troops. But at other stations where these minions are doing the bidding of the mayor, they're driving the officers into the ground. And then we've got the Dallas Marshals Department that are doing the work of regular officers, risking their lives and saying they earn anywhere from 20 to 30% less than an average officer. It's
wow.
Just heinous what they're doing here in Dallas.
Well, Nick, you got a bunch of callers lined up. We're going to go ahead and get to them real quick because we want to make sure we get everybody in. First one is for the 214 area code. Last four is 1272. Good afternoon. You're behind the blue curtain with Officer Nick Novello.
Hi, Nick. I live in North Dallas. Personally, it sounds to me, as I'm reading between the lines, it sounds like we either need to vote in some new council members to understand the seriousness of what's going on with this lack of funding, the salaries. It sounds like that you all are overworked, underpaid, and understaffed. And if this means we have to get out and talk to the city of Dallas and spread the word, we need to vote out that mayor. We need to vote in a mayor who thinks like we do and we know what's really going on, because the people of Dallas need to stand up and be heard.
Oh, no, well put, and I agree with you. I want to make a point that, you know, one of the things I'm trying to achieve now, we simply need to cut across the board, and I'm referring to race here, black, white, brown. We need to build an apparatus that transcends the political parties in power. We need to hold their hands of the fire and say, listen, regardless of your skin color, your grandkids and kids have to be safe. Now, we know that Warren versus the District of Columbia establishes you don't have a constitutional right to police protection. Little did we know that they would be so blatant in how would I say, doing their business in the face of that, and I'm referring to Dallas, because I hold hundreds of call sheets. Every time there's a shooting in Dallas, I assure you, the regular calls for emergency police service hold for hours. We do not have the staffing in place. All you're hearing is cheap sound bites about solutions. You know, and I want to say this. This is a word picture. The solutions that they're advocating are much like a tailor saying, I've been commissioned to do a suit, black silk, for a big six-foot man, but I've only got enough silk to do the suit for a three-foot man. That's where we are. We can't make that suit. And yet you still hear all these excuses, and we need the public's help, and this is a job for the public along with us. What in the hell do you pay taxes for? You pay property taxes that are astounding, some of the highest in the country, and I submit to you those taxes, for the most part, are diverted into other projects. And so anytime they talk about paying police and fire, they want to raise your taxes when you're already paying sufficient monies to have the best police and fire in the country.
Nick, it sounds to me like what needs to happen is the private groups, the private sector individuals and the citizens need to get together, and we need to find a way to circumvent the council and the mayor if they refuse to do anything about this. If we can't put enough pressure on them, I'm all for getting a group of private people together and meeting with you and police and saying, you know, what can we do as a private group? I mean, I just feel like there's got to be some – we've got to care. I care about what happens to my children and my grandchildren.
Oh, I agree. Listen, Nick, reach out to me. I have some things that I think you'd really like to hear about solutions that are viable, very viable.
Okay.
Obviously, they necessitate coming out of the old paradigms that don't work, but there's some things we can do collectively that we can, quite frankly, hold people's hands to the fire and make sure that there's change. I know that's possible, but we have to have people come together.
Yep, I agree. I totally agree. I just think we got to get our constituents together just like they do. If they're not going to listen to you, then we need to get our private groups band together and move forward.
I agree.
I want to tell her if she has time. Now, this is what's unique about this show, ma'am. You don't have to hang up. You're now here
okay.
in the conversation. That's how we do it here. We have because you are just the kind of caller I love that's not afraid to light somebody's ass up. And to see, this is the problem. Dallas is just a mirror terror is just a small microcosm of what the largest problem is. It's not just Dallas. It's Detroit. It's Houston.
Yeah.
It's L.A. This is what happens when citizens get tired of being divided and manipulated. And when you get platforms like this where people can come in and be part of the solution, I mean, you're a godsend here. And I'm going to jump down because we got some more callers, but your mic is still going to be open. So if you got a lot of noise or something, just mute your phone, and you'll be able to come back in whenever you want. And I'm going to go down to the 312 area code 0932. Good afternoon. You're behind the blue curtain. We're also Nick Novello.
Hey, Stan.
Hey, what's going on?
Stan, Joe.
Yeah, come on. Come on.
Yeah, it's interesting because the same problems that he has, you call them call sheets, we call them wraps. What happens is a district which could have 200 or 300 people on a watch or on a shift can go no car in a heartbeat. But again, it's a microcosm. You had 41 murders over in the last month. We had 41 shootings in a weekend. So the same problem you're having down there, we're having here. And we've talked about this issue. The reality is that, you know, what I call the cowardice of command. You know, you can have great people, but unless your command staff is willing to stand up and tell the emperor he doesn't have clothes on, then of course nothing happens. You know, there's an old adage that, you know, policemen, you knew the older policemen because they didn't get wet, they didn't get hungry. Well, there's a reason for that. Older policemen told you to get out the rain. You know, they knew where to eat at, that whole thing. So I agree. That whole problem that you have there is the same one here.
You know,
let me make a point real quick. That's why DPD is working overtime to get rid of the old heads. They want young, malleable officers here. They are going double time to get rid of the people with seniority who know better.
No question.
That's what they're doing in Dallas.
Well, that's what they did here. That's exactly what they did here. My FTO was a Vietnam vet. And what he taught and how I learned was totally different. But, again, my father and uncle were cops, too. But the difference is how do you approach people? So the learning curve is totally different. For us, and as you said earlier, Nick, for us, when you train a detective, in order to be a detective, it takes you 2 or 3 years to learn the craft, to even know what you're doing.
Yes.
You get a title, that does not make you a detective. You know, but here in this corruption, and I'll say it out loud, in this corruption, what happens is because they've used the police departments and most city agencies as patronage, and that's another word we don't want to talk about, but because they've used it for patronage so long, now they're bringing in these kids that have no experience. They don't really care about the community. So you have a reflection on what their values are, which are not your values.
This is correct
you know,
and well put.
One of the things I'd like to see explored, and I'm gonna do another show on it. I know I see the 214 caller. I'm going to get you in a minute. One of the things I'd like to see explored are civilian police chiefs, you know, that have an active, I mean, a command role in police departments, not these hollowed out boards that people have that they call commissions that may be effective in one city. But, you know, for the biggest majority of them, nothing but rubber stamps. Nick, you got another caller, 214 area code 4997. You're behind the blue curtain with Officer Nick Novello.
Hello? Hello?
Come on.
Hello?
Yep.
Can you hear me? This is Ms. London. I'm calling from Dallas.
We can hear you.
And I'm calling because the reason of the situation is because of all the lawsuits. You have plenty of lawsuits that was against a lot of the officers here in Dallas, you know, for the corruption. You had corruption in the police department. But it defeats the purpose of bringing Broadnecks here as well as Ms. Hall here if they're not going to fix the situation. You know, I'm with you, Nick, on that. They should have amended a whole lot of things. A whole lot of things should have been fixed. But if you don't fix it,
I agree with what you're saying. But they have.
You got to understand, you had people that was on your force that had lawsuits to come here because of the illegal things they were doing on the streets. So that's the reason why we don't have no police here.
What you're saying is very correct. Let me say this. The conversation is really very difficult to negotiate because, on the one hand, do we need police reform? Yes, we do. On the other hand, though, what you've said is right on the mark because did she inherit this mess? Yes. But what did she do with it? She did nothing but foster it. She didn't speak to the shortages. And now that we've got all this gang activity, let me say this to you, because this
she actually did this under the leadership of Mr. Michael Rollins, though. You know, you got to think about it. She's really not pulling the strings on anything. Broadnax and Michael Rollins are making the decisions for her. She's not making her own decisions. Come on, be real on it.
She's a puppet. Well, then she should say no.
Thank you. That's it.
I'm not going to say that. Yeah, she should say no. I'm not going to say that. That's not viable. And we're having all these young people pulling the trigger, being hurt, being shot. And now you see these people who are the ones that birthed this problem, and you're right. This is all
there are solutions for our teenagers. There are solutions for that we've been bringing at the City Hall all the time. One thing they do, they make money off of kids getting cards just to go into the recreation centers. Most kids can't get cards. I think it should be free all summer. The recreation centers need to be free all day. That'll make them tired. You'll be tired. You won't be able to hang on the street if you're at the gym all day. I mean, they make money off of kids having – you got to pay to use the gym. They play soccer in the gym and you play soccer outside. They let people rent the gyms out all around Dallas to make money. So if they quit being greedy and want to make all this money off of different private organizations, then everything will be better. You got to get these kids into something. I mean, when I used to go to Beckley Center. Now they only can go on Monday 6 to 8. They can go play one day out of a week because the rest of the week is probably rented out. So
wow.
How far is that for people in the community? We need those gyms back. It needs to be free. I'm going to be at City Hall Wednesday, and that's what I'm going to talk about because I went to talk today because they had people at the gym today, and I talked to the City of Dallas On the Go people, and I told them, what's the purpose of having that big gym there if you're going to let people play soccer in there? You don't let them play football in there. That's an outdoor sport anyway. You're supposed to play soccer outside. I want these kids in that gym so they can run around that gym. You can have a side for the little kids. Beckley Gym is so big. You can have a side for the little kids. You can have a side for the teenagers. It's as simple as that.
You
got people in the neighborhood that can help do something up there. I don't mind going up there and help doing something because I used to play basketball.
Right,
so my point is,
let me interject,
there are solutions.
It is a solution. I agree with you.
I totally agree with you. Some of these programs that could be funded by the private sector need to be funded. The people have got to stop being so apathetic, and we have got to get involved. We've got to help. We are the solution. We can't just bury our heads anymore. People don't, you know, they've got to get up off their butts. And they've got to say, you know what, I can do something. What can I do? And get out there and do it. I'm going to do it.
You know, ma'am, I agree. One of the things that happened, though, that I noticed shortly after the shooting of the officers a few years ago in Dallas, Chief Brown made a statement that, by and large, went unaddressed and kind of slid by everybody because I could understand the sentiment of the moment. But he made a statement with the protesters. He said, put down your protest signs. We have jobs for you. That's bullshit because they went into these low-income communities. They were sent in. Officers will go where they're sent to police. They don't just pick things. I can tell you from experience, we're sent to areas to do things. Now, when you send officers into a poor-area town in order to make numbers because the chief needs to look like he or she is doing something, and they went in there with these minor marijuana arrests and minor traffic ticket arrests just to produce numbers to justify chiefs and detached police administrators from not reaching out into the communities. And what happened? You put bullshit marijuana cases on people to where they now can't apply for city jobs because you, in effect, locked them out of the system and stood up there and grandstanded and said, we've got jobs for you. That was bullshit. And nobody up there called him out on it. And I know y'all were going through a lot up there.
Then another thing I wanted to address was the situation when she stated that they are creating, they create crimes in the neighborhood, have crimes. I understood what she was saying by saying that because you don't have jobs for them. They go to jail, they get a felony, they do everything. They even go through the process of trying to correct in their felony, and no one won't give them a job. I mean, that felony never leaves. So I'm sick of people saying, hey, you can fix the felony. They lying. It don't leave. The background be still up. The state of Texas has made it swear, people with felonies cannot get jobs. Period. They can't get. They can't run for office. They can't do anything. So what do you expect to happen?
Well,
we need solutions.
Very poorly. Okay, that should have been said. That, you know, she understands they're stealing food. She may understand they're stealing clothing. They need to feed their families or something along those lines. But you cannot for a moment justify, well, I understand why they commit acts of violence. What's that all about?
I don't think she was saying that. I'm thinking she's talking about, like, stealing out the stores, you know, stuff like that.
But
and then you got kids coming out of school thinking that being a drug dealer is better than working a 9-to-5, and that's crazy. That don't make any sense to me. You got kids that don't even have nothing on their names right now. But they, it's bad. It's bad thinking, but that's what's happening.
Okay, let him answer you. Go ahead, Nick.
Okay.
No, I mean, you know, she makes some wonderful points, but they're ad hoc solutions. Let's keep the kids busy. Let's get these programs up and running. And she's right. I had no idea that these kids have to pay to use the rec centers. But when the chief says that she understands why they would commit violent acts, are you kidding me? I mean, if she'd have said something like that they steal to feed themselves, feed their loved ones, they need clothes.
I thought that's what she was saying.
Good.
I really do.
But she didn't say that. She said she understood that why they commit acts of violence. That's an astounding statement. That's what upset so many officers here.
Well, I don't even think she needs to be here anyway. She's not fit for a city this big. I mean, that's just common sense. She's not fit for that.
Go ahead, Nick.
Okay.
Go ahead, Santa. You going to take a call?
Yeah, because I've got another one. You got a bunch of them lined up. Up in the 203 area code 1513. I think that's Charlie. What's going on?
Yeah, nothing much, Dan. Thank you for the Facebook notification. Nick, pleasure to always hear what you have to say. I want to take this in a kind of different direction, though. Of all you have stated about the problems in the city of Dallas, don't you see that as basically a platform for arguments for major cities around this country? I mean, here I am in Bridgeport. We either have a murder every day or every other day. And it's really getting frustrating because we know what the situations are. We know what the problems are. But they always state that we don't have enough money to do them. And I don't know how to say this, so I'm just going to throw it out there. Unfortunately, we had a mother of five that was murdered down the road in New Canaan, Connecticut. And it's made national news. And you see all the money that is going out trying to find this mother's body, okay? Now, we have women that have been shot, abused by others, family members, and there's nothing that can be done for them. They say that there's programs and every other thing like that, but there's no money for it. How in the world can we get these politicians, these legislatures, to put the money where it needs to go? When I was a child, and I'll be 55 this year, police officers, first responders, as you call them, those people were held in high regards because they cared about their jobs and they cared about their communities. Now, if you call the police officer to your house, 9 times out of 10, somebody's going to jail. They don't want to hear anything. All they just want to hear is what are the facts. And
right.
In your city of Dallas, okay, where there's been so many problems and issues, I've heard you talk, you and Stan talk about it.
We got to kind of move along, Charlie. We got a lot of calls.
I'm saying, how are you going to do it? I've heard what you said about trying to get the administration, but it seems like that's not working. It hasn't worked for 25 years. It hasn't worked in other communities. How are they going to understand?
You make some powerful points, my friend. Powerful points. Let me say something that will probably sound incendiary. It may upset the bulk of the listening audience. I don't know. But one of the reasons that my narrative is not specific to Dallas, you just pointed that out. But my narrative is occurring There's an undermining of policing in every major city in America run by liberal progressives. Now, if in fact, you know, policing in America is a paradigm based on consent within constitutional context, where we are right now, in my humble estimation, we're in the vacuum. We're morphing towards a system of coercion, because if in fact the system of consent requires black, brown, white, trust the cop, we have largely lost the trust of the minority communities, and a great deal of white America no longer has trust in law enforcement. What we're going to see shortly, and again, my estimation, we're going to see some type of a monolith, a police state. Where it'll manifest, I don't know. But what we're going through now is not sustainable. In Dallas, I went to the mayor's office, Mayor Rawlins, and showed him some call sheets. African-American guy shot, bleeding, no police, shooting on the freeway, no police. He acted as if I were just discussing dessert. So you have these people here in power, these progressives, who just refuse to call a thing for what it is. They call lawlessness free expression. And you know what we've got in some pockets of America today is chaos. There's no question we're there. And yet we countenance that and call it merely people who are unfettered and expressing themselves. Our culture is dying. And anyone who hasn't seen Seattle is dying needs to see it, because Dallas doesn't mirror the same dynamics per se. But what's happening in Dallas is even worse. We're totally losing our capacity to police ourselves. You know, when the chief says we're going to have GPS come in here to help and people go, great, that's a mea culpa. We're already asking external agencies to help us because we can no longer do the job ourselves. That's where we are.
All right, brother, let's get to, we got another caller. 719
Way out, my brother Stan, Jerry Kazmarek. How you doing, Nick?
Hey, how are you today?
I'm doing good, brother. I mean, if anything, I just wanted to say, I mean, you hit on so many valid points, and New Orleans is a prime example. New Orleans is no different than Dallas and a lot of the other neoliberal cities. Is that, first off, I blame both parties, both sides of the blame. But the bottom line on all levels. But you know what? I'll give you a prime example. Is that after Katrina, the minimum wage here is $7.25 an hour. And what happened, and this creates a lot of problems, is gentrification. And it's something that they don't want to talk about. But, I mean, the bottom line is that I call it destructive capitalism. Because when you go into a lot of these low-income brown and black neighborhoods, you start buying up properties and Vespas from out of state, your culture is slowly being eroded, people are being pushed out, rents have tripled in New Orleans. Who in the hell can afford a minimum apartment, rents like $1,000 a month, minimum, $1,500, $1,800, making $7.25 an hour, you know? And, I mean, the other thing, too, is I really believe also it's all by design. I think it's a school of prison pipeline, unfortunately. You know, I mean, the prison industrial chicken coop. You know, you got to keep pushing the chickens into the coop. And, I mean, if any of the educational levels all throughout the southern states are horrific. And, you know, it's like Stan and I have talked about this. In Colorado, the South is polarized. Colorado, I look through rose-colored glasses after growing up in the South. And I lived in Colorado for 10 years, and there's a bunch of free stuff for kids to do. The educational systems are 100 times better. I just think it's all by design down here. I really do, because they put business interests before people.
Yeah, I agree with you, Gerald. What you're saying is right on the mark. That's what's happening in Dallas. Listen, I want to be very blunt about this mayoral contest for this week. Should Johnson win, having been endorsed by Rawlins, all you're going to see is more of the same. Yeah, Johnson hasn't called this problem anything. He's accused Griggs of fear-mongering. That's astounding. He hasn't said anything about the deaths in South Dallas.
Let me tell you what's happening here. You know, what you just said about...
Let them know where you are. They don't know where here is. Tell them where you're at.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I'm in Chicago. I'm a former detective in homicide. I'm an adjunct professor and some other things. But let me just tell you this. This last weekend, we had 48 shot, 10 dead. Of the 19 people that were arrested with guns over this weekend, 11 were released on what's called an I-bond, an individual reconnaissance bond. They didn't even go to see a judge, but got out carrying a gun. Now, what's interesting on that is one of the guys that they let out on an I-bond committed a murder within 2 days of not even going to jail for having a gun he shouldn't have had because he's a convicted felon.
That's wild. That's amazing.
The truth. You know, Mr. Mosley, it's a perpetual cycle of despair. I mean, that just seems to me like, to back up, because Stan and I have talked about this, is that I'm retired from the police department here in New Orleans. And the one thing, and I'm so grateful that I grew up when I did back then, low income. But back then, I think it's all about epigenetics, which is nature versus nurture. We had blocks and blocks of pseudo parents and grandparents who would watch out for the kids and would keep you in line. But there was stuff to do.
Well, it was called the nuclear family. The whole neighborhood was your family. So if you guys came home with a bad grade, not only did you get it from your teacher, you got it from your brothers and sisters. If you stepped on your neighbor's lawn, the neighbor had the opportunity to whoop that behind. Now everybody's so afraid of somebody else's feelings. But if my kids, the way they're raised, my son still opens the door for his sister, his mother, his aunt, whatever lady he sees. Because that's the way we were raised. But that's the problem. You see the destruction of the nuclear family.
Let's do this because time is starting to run down. So what I want to do is I'm going to close everybody's mic with the exception of Nick's. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back down through every one of the callers that's up here that has pushed one that has come on. I've got two other ones that are up here that have not pressed one. If you want to get on, press one. And I'm going to give each of these callers 1 minute to talk about anything they want to talk about. It can be this or another topic before we go with Nick to wrap us up, so that way we can have good, clear volume without any interruptions. We're just going to go down one at a time all the way back down through them. And I'm going to start with the 214 area code, 1272. You got 1 minute. Anything you'd like to talk about?
Nick, thank you so much for exposing this and letting all of us be aware of what is truly going on. Scott Griggs is going to have my vote for sure, and I'm going to spread the word to everybody. I know it takes one person to tell two, they'll tell two more, and we'll keep it going. And yes, I agree with the caller. We've got to get back to values and to morals, and it starts at home. It starts with the parents teaching their children right from wrong. It's just going to have to be a community effort. Thank you for everything you're doing.
We appreciate you calling in.
Thank you so much.
All right. Appreciate you calling in. And don't be a stranger, because we're here every Saturday morning lighting folks up. So you can call on. As you see, when you call up here, you're on. You're not limited to 10 seconds and go away. Thank you for calling. You're in the house when you call here. All right.
Thank
you. Going to move down to. Yes, ma'am. 203 area code 1513. I think that's going to be Charlie. 1 minute, Charlie. Anything you want to talk about?
Okay. Well, I'll just be brief. Thank you very much, Nick, again, for appearing on the show. I love what you said and the other retired officers, and that's what I'm going to say. Through the National Fraternal Police Officers Union, is there a way, possibly, to bring back retired officers to work with these children in our communities, get them right there at the Vine where they're in elementary school growing up so they can have positive role models again instead of all these other rappers and other things or educational people to get these kids' minds going in the right direction? And I feel if we're able to bring back retired police officers, I know some might not come back because of the time that they put in, but I'm pretty sure that there are thousands of them, men and women, that would come back and try to help in their communities. Great show again, Stan, and thank you again, Nick.
Thank you.
All right, brother. Appreciate you, Charlie. Now we're going to go down 214 area code 4997. 1 minute, anything you'd like to talk about?
Well, I want to talk about solutions, and I think the only way we can have solutions is to open these wrecks up, and they got to stop charging fees. I think the summer it should be open for free. Due to all the murders, it needs to be open for free. That's something I will be talking about at City Hall Wednesday. I will be there next week, and I'm going to be talking about that. I really wanted to wait to get in there. So I've been trying to wait as long as I can, but after we had all these murders and then it's teenagers that's dying, some can't even make it to college, then, hey, we got to have another resolution, and that's to open the gyms back up.
Well, I agree. That is a tremendous solution to that.
Well, I know people that's willing to help me. All right, thank you.
Well, if we can help you out here, hit me up on Facebook, let me know what you need, and if I can help you, you know, maybe this Saturday you call up, you know, I'll give you a couple
of
to boost what you and you know, we'll see what we can do to help you. Appreciate you, dear.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. We're going to drop down to 312 area code. Big Joe, what's up, man? Come on. Give us something.
Hey, well, you know, again, a very great conversation. Again, Nick, I'd like to sit down and talk with you. All these retired police officers, we're all saying the same thing. Now, I mean, I was taught that if everybody's singing in the same church at the same pew, probably singing the same song. So it seems that the brothers in New Orleans, the brothers in Dallas, the brothers in Austin, Chicago, whatever, we need to sit down and come up with a plan and throw it at somebody. I mean, listening to all these solutions, we got the same problem, people.
Yep.
We do.
I'm good.
All right, bro. I'm going to leave your mic open, Joe, of course. You know, you're going to be here in the house. So 512 area code 7212. Let me get your mic. Okay, 1 minute. Anything you'd like to talk about?
Hey, Nick, I just wanted to say I appreciate your time today, and it's been really insightful. I personally live in a neighborhood where my appreciation of my home has gone up 70% in the last 5 years. A lot of the people where I live, about 1,000 house homes, feel that we still live in this bubble. About 3 weeks ago, I went outside. I thought somebody was an accident and had a .45 pointed at my head. The crime that we're all talking about is not just isolated to south of 30. It's everywhere in Dallas. And I think part of the problem is that people are in their own little microcosms and they don't realize how close it is until you literally have a gun pointed at your head. So people need to start waking up, and you need to keep on preaching what you're doing. And that's all I got to share. Thanks a lot, Nick.
Thank you.
You know, I'm going to give you some extra time. Because I think what you're saying is what people need to hear. Stop waiting to be a victim. So I want you to come on back on here and just, how did that make you feel? What went through your head when you were confronted with that? Because I really appreciate you telling your story like this.
It just made me feel that could have been anybody. That could have been my wife. That could have been my neighbor's kids, my godson that lives down the street. We're a tight community, but our eyes are not open to see, you know, this spread that everyone's been talking about. It's not just 30, it's everywhere. Dallas Police Department is spread thin everywhere, and what I've been told by a lot of the officers that I've talked to, crime is like mosquitoes. If you start spraying for them in your yard, are you going to kill them, or are you just moving them to someplace else? And so until we can take back what's going on in Dallas, all we're doing is moving the swarm.
Incorrect.
Man, I tell you, I really appreciate hearing from you because that's profound. I wish there were more people like you that would speak up. You know, you just said volumes in your little testimony. I appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate the time.
Yes, sir. We're going to drop down 719 area code 3613. 1 minute. Anything you'd like to talk about?
Well, I wanted to thank you all again, gentlemen, and for everybody who called in. But, you know, you were talking about a police state, and I'll give you a prime example. And I think New Orleans is exactly where where we're at right now. A lot of people don't realize there's cameras everywhere around the city now. And all that is putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound and everything that Nick was talking about. Eventually, I think that's coming to Dallas. It's coming to L.A., to a lot of other cities, big cities. And unfortunately, like I was saying, That's when you try to give people a false sense of security. Oh, because I was talking to somebody about this. They said, oh, I like the cameras. I said, oh, you do? I said, okay, so how many more of your rights are you willing to give up? You know?
Correct.
I can understand certain things and necessary evils. I said, oh, you like the cameras. Okay. But when certain things start, you know, overlapping into your rights, that's something that you don't like. And I just think that, you know what, unfortunately, I mean, we've gotten to this point, and it didn't have to, but that's a prime example of both sides not taking care of the needs of the people the way they should have. And they've decimated the police departments, first responders, educational systems, because now, and I'll sum it up, I just think police officers are social workers on wheels who take reports, and they're reactive now. They answer the radio, and that's it. There's really no proactive work no more. And I've heard that from a lot of active police officers here in the city.
Can I answer that, Stan?
Yeah.
Hey, let me say this.
Right.
If any police officer worth their salt understands that we are social workers, by nature, we are social workers. When you respond to that call, we used to have the discretionary power to arrest or not to arrest. Now we've become what you call an automaton. Therein lies the problem. The fact that, you know, particularly Chicago, is trying to base itself like London. But I must warn everyone, I have yet to see a camera lock anybody up. One of our cameras was catching numerous drug deals. It ain't arresting nobody. You still have to have that interaction, the social interaction, between those people in the car, police, and those people on the street. The problem you have is that we have failed to understand that we are social workers, because there's sometimes you don't have to arrest.
Right. Well,
but you know what, Mr. Mosley, you said the key thing.
Yes, sir.
Can I just say one quick thing? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, then we're going.
No,
but I mean real quick, and here's another thing too that a lot of people don't realize either, is that when I came on a department, like Mr. Mosley said, is that my FTOs, my training officers, had 10-plus years. Training officers today, I'm here and have 2 to 3 years on a job. So really, what do you know as a field training officer? They were supposed to go ahead, watch over you, and pass on that wisdom and knowledge that they have and the way to communicate with the community, actually – kind of like, you know, they were the go-between as you, as the new officer, to people in the community. And you don't – guys are leaving now after a year or 2 years. They're leaving their departments.
You're right about that.
They're fed up. I'm going to add in my little 2 cents, then we're going to let Nick close us out. And I'm just going to say, Jerry, always appreciate you, brother. I'm going to call you a little bit later. You know, I think today – one of the problems with policing is we are suffering from what has been called the Ferguson effect. And what is the Ferguson effect? While I am an advocate for police reform, as are all the officers that you've heard on the show today, because I know these guys personally. And I think there are a lot of things that need to change in policing. I think there's too much politics and religion in policing. I think that there's too much special interest in policing. And officers are being used and manipulated as checkers and little pawn pieces on the table to promote a bigger end. And I say this, the Ferguson effect is when officers have been so beat down, they're worried about being written up by the department, they're worried about being sued by a citizen, they're worried about if they give somebody a break being disciplined, if they don't give somebody a break, they're getting nailed to. So the officers are in the middle of all of this. Then you have the citizens who are also the victim. And I submit that that citizen on the street has more in common with that man and woman that's out there in that patrol car doing a difficult job than these bullshit police administrators that are sitting back sending officers to do their dirty work. The officers have to wonder on the street, is the administration going to back me? I'm following their rules. Well, you didn't do it exactly the policy. Bullshit policy wasn't out there in the middle of the night. I'm operating in real time out here. I'm in the game. I'm not in the stands. I'm getting hit from all directions. So I say that all to say this. This is something I want you all to think about, and we'll do a show on it. You better be careful, because I believe the tables are being set for a federalized police state. Now,
police
you all can say
yeah.
that's crazy. Yeah, it's not going to happen. Let me give you an example. You look at what's happening in Dallas. Now, in Texas, you have Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, Houston, El Paso. That's pretty much your biggest cities that you have here. What would happen if you went into a city and you told the citizens, guess what, we're going to drop your taxes by 30% because we're going to take over all policing functions. New cars, new equipment, as many officers as you want. Now, everybody's going to go for that. The city next door wants the same thing they go for. Then pretty soon you're under federal law. And we've already seen in this country with the Patriot Act how quickly we're willing to surrender our rights because we're worried about some preconceived definition of convenience that these people who want to call themselves the elite class are willing to give you. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to wake up. You are no longer living in a situation that is inconvenient or uncomfortable. This is a state of emergency in this country. There are Dallas police departments to some varying degree all across this country where you live at. And you've got men and women that are suiting up, going out here into hell every night, fighting. And what you guys don't know, they're not only fighting the crime in the street, they're also fighting a system that treats them as pawns and coins. So, you know, we got to get behind our police departments, and we got to put all of our politics aside to first back the officers who service the community and rebuild our communities. And then we need to start getting elected officials in there that have the community's best interests at heart, not just the special interests. And with that, I'm going to drop down to Nick to let him take us out. Come on, brother. Go ahead and wrap it up for us.
No, it's been very, very enlightening, Stan. For me, again, there's so many talking points. I want to finish by saying, as these news stories break on a daily basis, you see Chief Hall, the command staff, and others, they're scurrying about to make sure they absolve themselves. And no, you knew this day would be upon us. And so there's no getting away from the blame. This is not happenstance. This is in-house engineered crisis. And we have problems in Dallas. Again, here shortly, Stan, I'll probably be releasing hundreds of call sheets that State Sergeant notified, emergency call expired, no police available. That's not even a talking point for them yet. Wait till I release that. Let's see them address that. Stan, if we can't do the fundamental things police departments do, answer calls for emergency service, you tell me, can we really deal with homicide violence? Can we deal with gang violence? Can we deal with assaults and robberies? I don't think so, Stan. It's not going to happen.
No. Well, brother, I want to thank you especially for making time, and I know you just got off and you were headed home when you came on with us. And as always, I appreciate you. I'll give you a call. Detective Mosley, I mean, and Gerald, I mean, these are all police officers, ladies and gentlemen. And it's like Detective Mosley said, we're all saying the same thing. Either we're all collectively crazy or we're onto something. So maybe more and more officers across this country need to sit down and start talking and listening to this public and finding out that we're not all crazy. We're not all crazy. And then we can make a difference out here. And with that, we're going to get ready to get out. I appreciate everybody that called in, you know, especially up in the Dallas area. I appreciate you guys. Love you guys. And we're going to have a very unique show this week, this Saturday morning on Behind the Blue Curtain. What we're going to talk about is police service for the LGBTQ community. Are they receiving fair treatment? And this is in light of the fact that Dallas has had the murder of three transgender people, whose bodies it's all under similar circumstances. So they've also had two in Detroit. So we're gonna talk about that, because regardless of what people's philosophical, political, or religious beliefs are, these are people. They're parts of the community. So we're going to have a unique show on that, and we've got a special guest for that show also. We're about to get out of here. I appreciate everybody that joined in and participated in the conversation. Love you guys. And we're going to see everybody this Saturday at 10 a.m. Central Time for Behind the Blue Curtain. And once again, shout out to Officer Nick Novello. Appreciate you being here, Nick. You're the man. When I grow up, I'm going to be good like you. And we're going to get out.
Thank you for tuning in to Behind the Blue Curtain. You can follow Stan Mason and Behind the Blue Curtain at stanmason.com, on Twitter at Officer Stan Mason, on YouTube and on Facebook as Stan Mason. be safe, and look out for one another.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
All right, everybody, we're out.